Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
No, actually, you know what? Let's
let's do it live. We'll do it live.
Hi, Ben.
Thinking Basketball Podcast. My name is Ben. Welcome back. It's a sizzly playoff edition. I might have some rants today. And to guide me through it, someone I've wanted to have on for a long time, from The Ringer. How's that sound? Is that exciting?
It is. It's been really I changed my email signature and like a couple of those other things that you do. But I had an interview a couple days ago and I introduced myself and I was like, hey, it's Siri from The Ringer.
Yes, The Ringer.
It was like the first time I said it. I was like, yes. Oh, cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Formerly at Yahoo, now at The Ringer, just a ridiculously gifted writer, if you aren't familiar with her prose. Sirit Sohi, thanks for coming on.
Ben, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I feel like we've been circling for each other. You know I'm a big fan. I just told you that you're like very much in my YouTube algorithm. So I'm super excited to talk to you. Seriously. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Right before we started recording, we realized we should start recording and talking about it because I was almost beginning my rants about the games last night with the Bucks and the Nets. Like, help me out here. First of all, what do you make of the playoffs in general? I feel like it's just madness out there.
It's different, right? Like, I think this is a season of change. So I'm in a lot of different ways trying to recalibrate how I think about these situations. Whether it's the Clippers being down 2-0, there's a feeling of deja vu that I'm getting to the previous series. How I think about offense is changing.
Yes.
Is the value of it is changing versus defense. Also, the people are changing. Donovan Mitchell
is
having a coming out party. Trae Young is having a coming out party. The old order might be getting toppled over. Devin Booker, with help from Chris Paul, who might be now the oldest important player in the playoffs. Let me think, right?
I think so, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff changing. So I think we're in the business of we have to try to analyze all of this, right? So I can see how you're you're feeling the way that you are in terms of, I just don't know. I have to, like I said, recalibrate a lot, but I'm excited to do that with you because it's just such an interesting time right now. Like the playoffs really show you like where we are, I guess.
And this is, if you take Mitchell's bubble series, the 7 games last year against Denver, it's still a small sample, but you have 2 years in a row where he's just coming out in these games and, to me, just looking a step quicker than everyone to begin with, and then leveraging that quickness with a devastating outside shot that goes with all the typical things that Mitchell does. And he's growing as a playmaker. He's still not that alpha heliocentric model or anything, but you just look at guys like that and you're like, wow, this is like, how good is he really? And to your point about offense, one of the reasons I like the Jazz, I mentioned this on last week's episode, that I think they became the favorite in the West when the Lakers kind of toppled over and the Clippers. I don't know how, we haven't talked about the Clippers, so I'm interested to see how you feel, because I think this series is different than the last series, where I think the Clippers, especially with Ibaka out, have, I don't want to say too many flaws, but they are a flawed team. And then the Jazz, like, they're doing this without Mike Conley. They're doing this without yet another offensive weapon And I think where you and I are both thinking the league is going right now, the shape of these playoffs is like you need a ton of offensive weapons, like really good offensive players. And it seems difficult so far for teams to really provide that much resistance.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I'll start with Mitchell. I think watching him, the bubble is a really good demarcation point, I think, for his game. And I think you saw more evolution this year, but we've watched Donovan suffer through a lot of misses, you know, and I think I profiled him when he was in his rookie year, and I immediately just felt like there was something different about him because he just had such a good relationship with failure and losing. And I don't think he would necessarily, I don't even know if he would call it failure, right? Like, but just the idea that, like, in order to get better at anything, there are going to be a lot of plateaus, and you just, like, kind of have to have, like, I don't know what it is, like, maybe it's the confidence. It's probably confidence, the confidence to be able to just, like, go through all of that. And I feel like that was really, like, what the first few years of Mitchell's career were all about. Like, a lot of extension of his jumper, which for a while meant, like, too many long twos. Like, he was missing a ton of inefficient shots, floaters. You know, the Jazz gave him, like, a floater and finishing package on his in his rookie year. And he kind of, like, he just, like, kind of, like, tore through it. And that's when they were like, oh, okay, you're different. So they gave him, they started just giving him more to do. And I think that, like, at times, like, I don't know, maybe there were times where he maybe looked a little bit overloaded. But if you look at, like, the whole developmental trajectory and where it's taken him right now, I think, like, everyone comes off looking great in terms of, like, what the Jazz gave him to do. He could kind of walk right into the Gordon Hayward role that was left there in Mitchell's rookie year, which worked out great for him. But, like, I just feel like everything is coalescing for him right now. And this is the time for it to coalesce. Like, he's 24 years old. This is the time where things start to come together. I feel like, you know, this is maybe an athletic prime for him. And his brain and his skills have started to come together as well. Like, the pull-up three is something he's been working on for, like, over 2 years now. Yeah. And now it's coming together, right? Like, that's an impossible shot. That shot is why we are where we are with offenses and defenses. Like, what are you going to do? If you're, like, he used this against Memphis in such a genius way. And I think this is where you really saw his game evolve, where it's, he has a pull-up three. It's a threat, right? But he doesn't use it every single time. So he spends, like, a good chunk of game two just coming off of that screen, knowing that the Grizzlies are a team that want to go over on picks, and that Dylan Brooks, his matchup, who has, like, notorious foul issues but is also incredible for them when he can actually stay on the court, he just comes off a pick, waits for Dylan Brooks to be over-aggressive, and just gets him to foul him, and he controls games that way. Like, he is figuring out the mental side of this and how to best use his tools in order to manipulate other people in a way that, like, that's what I think, like, separates some of the really young, promising guys and whether they can get to that next step. Like, he's, while having, like, these scoring explosions and coming out the first half just, like, coming off every pick and hitting every shot, he is also starting to, like, almost become a more cerebral player. And look, man, if that's who Donovan Mitchell is going to be, and he's going to, like, figure out all of these things this early, and the Jazz are going to have, like, the Jazz have so many creators. They don't have a Conley playing in the series, and Bogdanovich can run a pick and roll. Joe Ingles can run a pick and roll. You know, like, it's just difficult. Like, Jordan Clarkson can come off the bench. And I think, I mean, first, like, we can talk about, we'll table the Clippers defense thing, I guess, until we talk about the Clippers. But it's just really, really hard when you have, like, Donovan Mitchell and then, like, a whole bunch of semi-creators that are also, like, just really talented and smart offensive players that can shoot. And, like, I love Ingles' lefty game. I think that gives the Jazz so much more versatility in terms of, like, just using the whole court. They're just an awesome offense that hits, like, really difficult shots, but also smart shots on a regular basis by, like, leveraging the best of their skills. And they play really well together. So yeah, the Jazz are great.
So all right, so we're kind of on the same page with the Jazz, because this is how I've been seeing them as the season was cresting, and then really I wanted to see basketball in the playoffs, and right after the first couple games against the Grizzlies, I was like, oh, okay. Basically, everything you just said about the Jazz team, that's what's going to make them very dangerous in the postseason against anybody. Some numbers before I get back to, because you had so many great points in there about Mitchell. I want to talk about one in particular. Scoring right now, 37 points per 75 possessions. That's the second straight postseason he's at that mark. Just for perspective, that's like,
Good.
that's good. Yes, that's like Michael Jordan and then everyone else. Those
Right.
aren't normal numbers, although. And I don't want to get too lost on the Jazz, but like part of the reason I can't wrap my head around this season is there's more 30-point kind of scores than we've ever seen in a postseason. Maybe it'll change as the rounds go on, but Embiid is at the same level, except Embiid is his efficiency is plus 13% relative to his opponents, which is like also good, also very good. And Luka just had a series where he was at 35. Nikola Jokic is at 33. Dame and Tatum just had series where they were at 32. And then you get to a guy who's one of the greatest scorers in NBA history, and you're like, yeah, Kevin Durant looks really good. And there are five or six players in this postseason with better scoring numbers than Kevin Durant. And I just don't know what to make of this. The Nets, we think of how potent the Nets offense has been. Well, Embiid and the Sixers, like when Embiid's on the court, the Sixers have the highest offensive rating in the playoffs. It's like 136. That number doesn't make sense to me. That's like transition layups for LeBron James in the past, right? Like that just doesn't make sense. And Mitchell, back to the Jazz, they have a 128 offensive rating with him on the court in the postseason, 127 with Gobert in the first round when they had Conley, 133. So, Sirit, this is what I'm like trying to figure out: what on earth is going on with these? What is normal? What is East and what is West anymore?
Well, certainly nobody's normal. I wonder if this is just coaches and offenses getting smarter and realizing that the best way to score a lot of points is to leverage your stars as much as you possibly can. Like we the NBA is so star centric right now, and like everyone that's useful in the framework of an NBA offense trying to, win a championship is somebody that can play off of a superstar and essentially like just take the attention away. Like people who give like either you space for a star, you play defense, or you're like cutting like Bruce Brown. Like Bruce Brown is so valuable because he does everything that stars don't do. Like he just won't. I mean, and that's not even fair to stars. Like stars are setting screens and playing defense. It's the playoffs. Like you got to do all of it. But yeah, just I don't really know how to make heads or tails of it, other than that it's a lot of fun. And like I don't know what as a defense you can do. That said, I mean, like if we want to get specific, there are some things the Clippers could do on defense, right? Like I feel like watching the Bucks series and watching the Clippers series are kind of like similar experiences right now, where there are things that can be done. And you know what? The Bucks made some good adjustments, and like I'm sure we will talk about that. You know what? Let's just get into your Bucks rant.
No, I want to save the Bucks rant because I don't want to
You want to save
lose.
it?
Yeah, because let's go back to Mitchell for a second. I don't want to lose this thought because it might plug into what you think the Clippers defense can or maybe can't do. I said at the top, he just looks quicker. And then you had a bunch of points that made me realize it's not just looking quicker. He is starting to process that immediate space around him much faster. And I think it shows up in probably, let's say off the top of my head, three specific offensive moves. One is the use of the crossover. The second, which is related to the crossover, is when to reject a screen. This is all happening like in that first explosive attacking step, which of course has always been an edge he's had. But when you add a cerebral component, then you pick apart everything in front of you. The third thing I would say is the Euro step, which he's also probably had. But it feels more dict it's like Luka, right? But he's quicker. It's he's dictating to the defense. And in fact, the Jazz last night And I don't know how many times they've run this. I just haven't seen all their, unlike Dave Dufour, I didn't watch 72 Utah Jazz games this year. So I don't know if they've always had this in their package. But
Dave watched every game.
He claims he watched every single Utah Jazz game this year. Yeah. So, but they had a play last night where he had a screen on the wing, and the second screener coming over to set what would normally be a stagger, like two screens in the same direction, flipped it at the last second because Mitchell loves to get by the first screen and split the second, depending on how the Clippers are playing it. And that was like a baked in adjustment at some point in the game where whoever was on the far side, it may have been Bogdanovich, sprints over like he's going to set a second screen in the stagger and then flips it because Mitchell is going to split it. And just that like space in front of him, whether you're crossing over, splitting a screen, and this goes to your point about the value of the pull-up. If all of a sudden now you've got the pull-up three where you also have to worry about that, that immediate space in front of him on that first foray seems to be the thing that he's really just constantly dictating. And I'm interested to hear what your defensive cure-alls for the Clippers are, because unlike last series, where I thought, like, you know, people like to say this, like, can a team win 4 and 5? It's like, yeah, they can. They can. And they did. And probably they did because they're better. And they have more things that they can go to as adjustments than Dallas did. This series, I don't feel that way. I just think the Jazz are probably, they're doing this without Mike Conley. So to me, they're just better.
Yeah. I think the Jazz have shown that they are better than the Clippers, at least in this series. I just find it so hard to figure out where the Clippers are going to go from here because they just haven't tried that hard. Like, I don't really know how else to put it. Like, they've just been super inconsistent.
The players or the organization?
The players. Okay. The organization. I mean, the organization seems to be, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like Kawhi likes to, like, but okay, this is so weird. Like, I feel like the Clippers, like, reset themselves. Like, usually you come out of a playoff series and you're like, this is what we learned. And I think that while Luka and Mitchell are very different players, if you've seen Mitchell's numbers on pull-ups this season, you would think that if Zubac couldn't handle the matchup against Luka, he's probably not going to have, like, the best case against Mitchell. Like, I'm not always against resetting back to, like, your core values, but I just felt like the Clippers learned some very vital information about themselves in the first 7 games that they played and then came into the series like they had amnesia. Like, they've, like, you know, like, they're not, their defensive intensity picked up in the second half, but it's like, dude, this is game 2 on the road and you lost game 1. Like, you know, you're going to have to try. And you know, like Ty Lue kind of reset his rotations. Like, obviously the easiest thing to focus on is just Mitchell hitting a bunch of pull-ups over Zoo, right? He's not going to hit as many all the time, but the fact that you've given him this confidence and now he has a rhythm for the rest of the game, I think is like probably contributed to why Luka had some of the games that he did against the Clippers as well. So like that's the most obvious one. We didn't see enough Terrence Mann, I don't think, who was fantastic. Patrick Beverley is back. Pat Bev is actually had a really, like, I think they needed his energy. I think I liked what I saw from him yesterday. So like, that's one of those arguments. Like, yeah, let's see how a different guy does in a different series. But like, it just feels like that's what game 1 is for. And now you're in game 2. So at least like go back to what was helping you win. And that goes to the players too, in terms of like, you know, I think Paul and Kawhi's intensity on defense really needs to pick up. Kawhi found himself defensively in the Maverick series. And like, this is something that he does. He's actually figured out some things like on help side in terms of like just reading what the decision makers are going to do that like he kind of carried over from, I think, from, you know, playing help side on Luka to Mitchell. That is awesome and just genius. And I don't know how it is that anybody guesses what anybody else is going to do, let alone an NBA player, but he's managing to do it. But the ISO defense needs to be better. And like, their execution on offense needs to, they just need to do so many things better. And it's, this is not to discredit the Jazz, but I really feel like, you know, the Clippers, when they, you know, when it's PG and Kawhi actually driving to the hoop and like setting up other guys, they just play a better game that I haven't seen from them yet, because like they're the fucking Clippers and they're going to like
so
play a 48 minute game like once every 5 games, you know?
Well, so okay. So how much of
once
this
once every 5 playoff games?
Yeah, but how much of that is fatigue, you know, asking, like, take Kawhi. I just have thought,
I don't think like Tyler wasn't like too tired to play Terrence Mann, you know, like I just there's things you can do.
Yes. Well,
there's so, it's so strange, and I don't mean to like discredit it. I just think it's like, it's so illogical that I hate to even use logic right now. You know what I mean?
I want to say you've taken a sledgehammer to it, but we haven't gotten to the Bucks yet, so I can't, I have to temper the critique scale, because for where I'm going to go with Milwaukee or on like a 3, I'm going to take us to a 10.
I'm just so confused, that's all.
I'm more confused by the Bucks. Here's what I'll say about the Clippers. I think the offense, their offensive efficiency throughout the year was fantastic, and their offensive efficiency against Dallas was still very good, and their offensive efficiency in this series has still been good. You know, Kawhi and PG, whether they could do more, shoot better, all that stuff, I think that's absolutely on the table for improvement. But I think the general shape of their offense hasn't really been a problem. I actually think maybe sometimes we have too high of an expectation for the Clippers offense, like they're just gonna look like, when the Nets are just blazing, they're just gonna look like that. I don't know if they have that. Like, one of the takeaways for me coming out of that Dallas series that I said this series feels different is I just came away thinking, man, the Clippers just don't really have that many high level playoff players. You know, like, they have players that will stay on the court. Marcus Morris will have a game every once in a while. But look at last night. Reggie Jackson was your third guy. In 2021, I don't think you want Reggie Jackson to be your third guy. Paul George, he's had better seasons in the past. I'll put it that way. I'm not sure we're ever going to see... I was a big Pacers Paul George fan. And, of course, the year he had in Oklahoma City in 19... was phenomenal. And he had, we forget this. This is one of my concerns about the Clippers when we had the summer of Kawhi. Well, I for you in Canada, maybe it was, you have a different name for it. But like when they got
we
together,
call it the summer of Toronto.
Okay. It's the summer of Toronto. Yes. That's a much better name. But George had surgery on both shoulders, right? If I recall correctly, he had at least one shoulder surgery, and I think he had two. And I can't remember what day of the week it is, let alone a couple years ago. But these are things that I think we still have the expectations. We still have the names on the jersey, all that kind of stuff. And I just look at it and I'm like, yeah, Paul George is not playing like you've got LeBron and AD out there. It's not that kind of thing. So to expect that kind of thing in a way is a disservice. And that's kind of where I am on the Clippers. It's like, they're very good, but that's about it. And there's only so much we can expect those guys to do at this point.
Yeah. So this is on GM Kawhi then.
I think that's the story. Yes. I absolutely think that GM Kawhi. Yes, absolutely. I think that's it. 100%. Probably something that's not talked about enough is that his, now you could say he wanted to play near home and all that stuff, but clearly there's an element of team building from, hey, if Paul, if you go to the Clippers, I'll go to the Clippers, let's make this happen. And I said this a couple of weeks ago on one of my episodes, like, if in your head you're thinking LeBron and Wade or Jordan and Pippen 2.0, it's probably, that's not the thing here.
Well, the thing is, I just wanted a second star, right? Like, I feel like he didn't care who the second star was. Like, it felt like he was just calling people up that whole weekend being like, hey, you want to be the second star? And they're just like, and just, you know, they're like, ah, no, I'm going to Miami, or like, you know, I'm whatever you're doing. And it felt like Paul George was the guy that was like, sure, I'll be the second star. And it was like, okay, cool, let's do it. And like, there wasn't much beyond that. I disagree that the offense has like, I don't think that they need to be the Nets. But I think that they need to leverage their abilities better. Paul and Kawhi, I feel like both play a little too perimeter oriented, especially for a team that, like, if you're not going to have Serge right now, if you're not going to, they don't really have post threats, right? And they have a ton of spacing. I feel like they should probably be posting up more, or at least just finding like better ways to get in the paint than to like be at the top of the key trying to always run a high pick and roll, especially when like sometimes that threat that's setting the pick is not going to be like that great, right? So I think that's part of it. I also just think that like if it's I think maybe this is just coming to terms with what you're saying, which is like that maybe this team is not that good, because ultimately if you're going to like try to win this series based on like a balanced approach between offense and defense, they don't really necessarily have the person. I don't know.
But that's
I
where I
think
think
they can
Ibaka
play
is huge.
smaller. Like I feel, I think they can switch more. I think they can play smaller. Like, what did you think of the zone?
I thought the zone was an like I usually think when you go to a zone, I have no problem with seeing whether it works. And I actually think it was really effective in the possessions that they played it, right? The tricky part with a zone in the playoffs, and coaches and executives will tell you this. You go to it to see if it quote unquote works, but then you better be really, really, really good with your evaluation methods because you can give up a couple open shots, and if they miss them, you fool yourself into thinking the zone works. And then the rest of the series, you're like, we got to go back and try that zone again. And it didn't actually work. They just missed open shots. The other issue with the zone is a lot of teams seem to figure it out. And so it's kind of like the way Nurse uses his junk defenses. Like, you don't sit in them all game necessarily, but you try to throw them in at times or against different lineups where you think they'll catch the opponent off guard, it'll be effective. So I always kind of feel that way about zones in general, and I thought it was a fine thing to try last night. I'm not sure though how much it's gonna really solve any of the things that you're concerned about with them. I think Ibaka, I liked the Ibaka signing. I think him not being out there takes away a kind of lineup versatility that he can provide for this team. And so, maybe it's just that. Maybe you lose a guy who offers you that defensively and you just have a gap there. You have a hole there. I don't know.
I kind of want him to try going like super small. Like,
Smaller than Batum at the quote unquote center?
did we see much? We didn't see much of that lineup yesterday.
No, that was from the last
Yeah,
series.
that was in the last series. Yeah, I would like to see a little bit more of that, honestly. Like, I think that's probably the best way to counter Gobert. And I also think that like it's probably the only way that you're going to consistently get good offense if you have like the three of those guys on the court together, and then like even throw in Rondo. Like, I would go like PG, Kawhi, and as much shooting and playmaking and the ability to run around them. But actually, speaking of the ability to run, like one thing I was actually kind of thinking, especially when you look at like how vital Donovan looks, is like, are the Clippers just old?
If you look at the ages of the players, it doesn't feel like they should be an old team. But this is what I was saying about PG. Like, between the leg, the shoulders, whatever else has gone on with him, he definitely has lost, if not a step, a half a step, right? Kawhi does not move between the knee and the weight. He does not move like he did in 2016. It's not the same.
Yeah, I think he can for games. Like, I think he turned it
For
on in game six,
stretches.
seven,
Yeah,
right?
I think he can do it for stretches, and I do think it does wear on him. I do think that there's a limitation to how long he can do that. But then you look at the rest of the roster. Again, on paper, they don't seem like they should be that old, but it does feel like, Batum's 32. He's been in the league for a long time. Well, he's his 32-year-old season. Marcus Morris around the same age. It's like that might be it. That might be a part of this where, and look, they just had a 7-game series, and I don't want to get into the load management with the Clippers, but they might be fatigued.
What do you think? What do you think is going to happen? It seems like you think the Jazz are going to pretty easily win this series.
I think the Clippers offense is still good enough that they could win another game or two. It feels to me like Utah gets one of these next two games in LA, and then it's just trouble. Down 3-1, having to go back to Utah for the rest of the series. I like your idea of going really small, because to me, that's what's going on with the Nets this year playing Jeff Green. I've talked about this, and Durant basically as your quote unquote bigs. Mm-hmm. They are continuing to cheat the system and slant toward offense. And this is part of why offensive ratings in the playoffs are like 115 league wide, because you're putting more skilled, smaller offensive players on the court in lieu of the big bruising bangers, the dinosaurs that have gone extinct. And in this series, the thing that I was so excited about, the fire and lightning between the Bucks and the Nets, was that now they're playing like Bruce Brown at mm-hmm. center. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Durant's kind of really the paint protector because of his height. But Kevin Durant is as sort of thin and frail as a 6'10 or 6'11 NBA player will ever be. And you saw this in the first quarter of game one, where by the end of the quarter, he was like bear wrestling Brook Lopez, so he couldn't just move him inside. And in the first quarter of game one, I have it here because it just 9 of 15 at the rim for the Bucks and 9 offensive rebounds. And I'm like, yeah, that's what this series is going to be. The Nets are going to need to put a big on the court, a real big like Claxton mm-hmm. or DJ or whatever, or they're just going to outscore them and do their Nets thing. And then all of a sudden the Bucks were like, you know what we should do for the rest of this series, Sirit? Not go inside or attempt to offensive rebound anymore. But we'll leave the same lineups on the court. What we'll do is we'll have Giannis shoot as many threes as possible. And Brooke, you go stand in the corner. Don't even go on the wing so you can get back and transition defense. Just go stand in the corner so you can just spot up. But maybe don't shoot it that much because you're not that good of a shooter either. And yeah, off I am. I'm warming up. I'm just only warming up. This is the beginning of my Bucks rant. I've never seen anything like it.
Do you think there's anything the Nets are doing to mitigate?
Their defense has been a little sharper just from a team perspective than at the beginning of the game one. But it's that thing with the Clippers and the Jazz. Like, if the Clippers go super small, it's going to be up to the Jazz to say, hey, maybe Rudy Gobert should get more offensive rebounds. Maybe we should use him as a lob threat more. Maybe when he gets... Here's my thing with the Nets. When Brook Lopez, who's an enormous human being and knows how to like catch the ball and score in the post, when he's switched onto by either Bruce Brown or Kyrie... I mean, Kyrie Irving is like 6'1". This is madness to me that mm-hmm. they can't throw an entry pass. It's just bizarre. Well,
it's harder to throw an entry pass when Giannis is the guy that's out in the perimeter and Blake Griffin doesn't care that he exists okay. when if there's going to be a mismatch.
You mean, are
then
you...
Then all of a sudden, like, Blake Griffin has somehow become, like, an amazing help defender because you've given him the easiest decision in his life.
are you suggesting that the three-point line is, like, cheese and a mousetrap to Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Perhaps. He did hit one yesterday, which totally justifies him taking eight.
Yes. Yes, don't forget, when you're 3 for 30, if you just make the next one, you'll be 4 for 31. My next rant is, so in 2019, Giannis kind of takes the leap, right? Puts these things together. Bud comes in, helps shapes the offense around him. He wins MVP. No one really has any problems. Great regular season. Mm-hmm. And then people start to say, oh, he's got to work on his three-point shot. And I have been on the no threes bandwagon. If I could get a shirt, like no threes or something, I would just wear it around. I always thought, add a few simple post moves for the very reason we're talking about here. And if you want to work mm-hmm. on your shot inside 15 feet, like a little fade over your shoulder from 12 feet. He throws that shot in every once in a while, but that like inside 15 feet shot will help unlock his game. He is an abysmal outside shooter. Here's my question. I was thinking about this last night. Did practicing three-point shooting just completely ruin his shot ever? He can't even shoot free throws anymore.
Okay, so I went back and checked this exact thing, and I think so. Let me find it. There was... I can't remember which offseason it was when he really started shooting more threes, and you actually see it directly in his game log. What happens is that his attempts from three start going up, and as soon as that happened, his free throw percentages started going down. Giannis's form is just a whole thing that we can cover or not cover. It's obviously broken. It has gotten progressively worse over the years. It's I I'm not and I'm not look, I'm not saying this to like trash Giannis. I think this is like a genuinely concerning thing for like one of the most amazing players that we've actually ever seen to like have this type of developmental atrophy in his skills, especially when you see the other things improving, right? Like he's definitely worked on his body, his defense certainly I think gets honestly smarter by the game. Like he's almost become an underrated defender. I feel like it's just something that we don't even talk about with him anymore, but like he can wreak upside havoc, and he does, and he has in this series. Like he's had trouble in like some of the isolation matchups and stuff, but like there was one where like it ended up in a Bruce Brown floater, and like the Bucks got I went back and watched it again because it was like such a tough possession for them on in transition. But you had like Blake Griffin dribbling up, so Giannis like doubles him on the dribble so that he gives it up. Then like it goes to Shamit, Brook Lopez rotates to that, then Giannis rotates to Shamit, and then Drew rotates to Brown, prevents the Joe like there's a pass to I think that he could have made to Mike James, prevents that. Bruce has to drive. Then Giannis helps again. Instead of a floater, yeah, you know, instead of a layup, he hits a floater. And that's it, like in one possession. Like it sucks because they hit the shot anyways. But like in one, first of all, good job, Bucks. Second of all, in one possession, Giannis has changed the course of the offense 3 times. Like that's people don't do things like that. Like his playmaking has gotten better. But for some reason, like the skill development on offense has just not really moved a lot, and it's not just the shooting, it's his post footwork, his footwork in general, and even on drives, like the euro step and the spin have become incredibly predictable. He travels like this isn't like he looks awkward, so like refs call travels. Like when you get him in the post, he is going to travel, and it kind of immediately becomes evident that like I don't know, like something's up.
You're really getting into a lot here. He had a spinning dunk last night that got at least a couple replays before commercial, where even on that, it wasn't called. Even on that, he clearly traveled. He reshuffled the pivot foot and the spin foot once he finished the spin.
By
So,
the way, NBA players travel. I am talking, I understand that like we this is such a low curve, right? Like I don't want to rag on this guy for traveling just 'cause like, you know, it's easy, like everyone travels. This is different. Like this is different.
yeah, well, the travel aside, I think the point about the footwork and the predictability of the footwork is an interesting one. I still think, you know, given how outlying he is as an athlete of his size, like that play in the game last night, where, by the way, that game was only, was that last night? The Bucks
Yeah, it
game?
was
Was
last
that
night.
are
It
you
was
sure
yesterday. Yeah,
that
it was
was
the
last
first game
night?
yesterday. Yeah.
That feels like a
It was
month
just like,
ago. It was just an
yeah.
experience.
It was funny after I had the PBR going, so then like as soon as I reset it after the Clippers game, it like reset to the end of the Nets game, and I was like, "Oh my God, that was a decade ago." Just after the one game.
Yeah, that was the offensive ratings in that game, by the way, were in the 80s. It was a homage to the year of 2004. But that play where he backed up against Blake Griffin late in the game and tried just to, hey, I'm going to ISO, but I've somehow decided I know I shouldn't shoot a three. And then he just gets to the free throw line and he's like, well, if I go in the paint, I might get 3 seconds, so I'll dribble through my legs repeatedly. But let me back up.
He backs up.
When he backed up, I actually yelled to my wife, what the hell is he doing? Because I thought he was gonna run back to the 3-point line to shoot a three. And then here's the rub, like he backed up, but Blake is like, I'm just gonna stay 9 feet from the hoop. And
Yeah, he wanted to get a runway.
yeah, he was trying to get a runway. And it's like, to me, the footwork plugs into what I was saying about his post game. Just give me some, come off of a summer where you've got a clean drop step, right? Where you've got some, you've got an up and under.
He only needs two post moves. He doesn't need a lot.
Something.
Yeah.
Something. I will take a sky hook, although that's probably asking for too much. After doing Kareem,
it becomes like an automatic sky hook if it's Giannis shooting it. But that's kind of the thing, right? Like if he has one or two of these, they become unguardable. He doesn't need to run the developmental gamut at all.
Well, there's this weird thing where he's still very successful on offense as a role man, as a finisher, as an offensive rebounder because of his athleticism and his explosiveness. And so you can put him in pick and roll and you can say, hey, I want you to play more like AD next to his guards. I want you to play more like David Robinson when he's off ball, whatever that template is. But then there's the, oh, five out offense where Giannis is in the middle and he runs everything. And that's where it gets dicey to me because it's like, well, he's not that great of a creator, and you have a lot of warts or ways to take away his scoring, and when you do that, he doesn't really have that many counters. And so...
Mm-hmm. He actually is a lot like early career Blake Griffin without any of the defense.
Well...
Like, just offensive end in terms of, you know, like, really good transition creator, just explosive as all hell. Like if you let him, if you give him a runway, like it's kind of over for you.
That's a great comparison. And what I was going to ask you is what year, because I think it's
like rookie second,
when
Blake was super, super aggressive, athletic, and was just kind of able to pummel anybody at the rim.
Well, what's so ironic about that comparison, besides the fact that Blake is guarding him in this series, is that late career or mid-career even Blake Griffin became so much more skilled. Like his passing and his shooting and his decision-making. And that seems to be what's missing from Giannis. And to your point, this is still someone who's at the top of the mountain. Like he's a phenomenal, especially with his defense. Just a phenomenal basketball player. But...
Maybe there's a lesson in the Blake thing where, you know, even LeBron too, I think a lot of guys, it took them until much later in their career for the stuff that they worked on to actually start showing itself because they were just so behind in terms of reps. And I don't think that's ever been more true than in Giannis's case, you know? So I think if you compound that with the fact that like, there have been some shifts in his development over the time and perhaps some conflict in terms of like who he should be. Like it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you look at it, I don't want to look at it like you shoot 10,000 jumpers and then you're great. Right. But he is just way far behind from like, you know, Kyrie Irving's had a basketball in his hand since he was 14 months old. Right. Like there is just like a relationship you develop with the game on offense that I think like is really difficult to replicate through anything but like sheer experience and doing it over and over again.
And I'm also okay with that because to be his size and move the way he does, I've called him the modern Shaq because it's like when you have that advantage, I don't need you learning to create a pick and like spread pick and roll reads and the shaker pass coming out of the corner and pull up threes. That's not going to be your game. And I think that's all the more reason to me why having skill development with simple stuff around the basket, footwork, whatever it is the pathway. I found his free throw numbers here. 65% in the last two seasons in the regular season and in the last three playoffs, 60% on 300 attempts. And he's at 52% this year. So it's like, it's going the wrong way. I need my Planes, Trains, and Automobiles meme here. You're going the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I have questions. But yeah, like it's interesting. Like, what do you think of this series in general? Because I thought, there were some parts of game two and also like game three that were really interesting in terms of like, I guess the direction the game is going. First of all, the score, right? Like, I don't think we've seen a score in the 80s this season. I don't know. Like that part of it was really interesting. I thought the Bucks were able to get the Nets out of rhythm on offense. And this is like, this is what's going to make or break the Nets, I think, is just how quickly they can figure out when they're in these situations when they try to get everything back all at once. And, like, I felt like the second quarter, And there was, I think there was a stretch in the third where the Bucks just got like Kyrie and KD to go hero ball a couple times, and they killed some possessions that way, and they just looked really, really out of rhythm. I mean, Drew's been fantastic. Fouling and just the way the refs call it, I think is going to be a major part of this series. The aggressiveness that Tucker was able to show towards KD towards the start of the game was something that I don't think we saw in the first two games. The calls in general, right? Like the Nets just didn't get a lot of free throws. I think they were settling too. Like I think, you know, the Nets can just, you know, blowtorch everybody, right? But I think that they also like one of the things that they do miss a little bit with Harden, and that like you see KD try to make up for as well, is just like, this is the rhythm of the offense right now. This is where we are in the game. Like, we're going to slow things down. We're going to get a good shot, like a couple of sure thing paint shots, right? KD is like kind of trying to be a game manager, and I think like he's actually been like really smart with it. Like, there was in game one, had a great third quarter. Like, I think was about to get into foul trouble. Said, no, keep me in the game, just closed the third off incredibly strong. I think like had an understanding of the moment. I think coming into game two, just getting off on such a strong start, another thing that Mitchell did as well, just saying like, I am him, like you're gonna have to deal with me if you want to win this game too. But it's ultimately like he's a scorer at heart, right? And I think that like balancing those roles for six, like to win 16 games is going to be pretty difficult. Like, I think that's going to be like their biggest challenge. Because if they can actually just make sure their offense is right, and there's obviously always going to be like some level of variance in that, but like if they can play half court defense, you're done.
Yeah.
Like,
Well,
that's it.
so there's a couple things with the Nets. One, I still think their offense. So let me take a step back. I think the coaching staff does not get enough credit for what they've done this year.
The
And
structure versus flow thing with them is amazing.
yeah.
Like that's how you find Bruce Brown's.
Yep. And they have, that's right. If you have lesser players on the court, or you have one star instead of three, or you don't have the right shooters, then Bruce Brown of last night, Bruce Brown extraordinaire, floater center role man extraordinaire, doesn't exist. But when you've got the offensive sets that they run with the personnel that they run with the shooting, and then, Harden is the best passer of the lot, but they can pass. Oh, let me go back to another Bucks rant really quickly. The Bucks in this series are legitimately one of the worst passing teams I've ever seen. They have missed so many early hit aheads, cutters, or basic entries. And I understand your point about Blake sagging off. That's definitely been a thing, right? Where they're trying, you got all these complicated front the post, three quarters, help side, and it helps when you have no spacing with the gut. But Milwaukee has, like, I study passing. It's a passion of mine. I'm always seeing guys who are cutting open. They actually hit one last night. I was in a group text and I texted, oh my God, they threw a layup pass. I can't believe it. They threw a pass to someone who caught the ball open under the basket and he
What was
converted a
that?
layup. It may have been in the third or fourth quarter. I'd have to find it. But they just see it. They've missed like every single pass to the point where when they bring the ball up the court, the ball's not popping. It doesn't have that, like, oh, here's a cutter. You hit him, the defense collapses, there it goes. There's only a couple possessions where we've seen it swung around and you get that movement.
That
And
magic Brooklyn Nets zip.
the Brooklyn
That
Nets.
how we get it, that how we get Joe Harris corner threes, even though it's the only shot that anybody should ever be guarding.
Well,
Ever.
that's why Joe Harris is such an amazing complimentary piece to the Nets three stars. But we'll get back to that. We'll get back to the Nets. Just like, I don't think Milwaukee can beat the Nets. Hey, the Nets have to guard in the half court. I don't think they can beat the Nets, and probably couldn't beat any of the other high level championship teams moving the ball this way. And this is a team that for the last couple seasons, even with some of the issues they've had and the disappointing playoff exits, for the most part, has still been a pretty good offensive team. And to just see it like come to a standstill, I'm less worried about someone like Chris Middleton not surprised at all about his bounce back game last night. I think with everything we've said about Giannis in this series, he still is putting up numbers because he has such an advantage. This is the most porous by design. Unless they put Nick Claxton on the court, this is basically by design the most porous interior defense you'll ever get to play against at a high level sort of championship type team late in the playoffs. So that will be there for him. But man, Milwaukee needs to, like, okay, they're shooting 20% as a team or whatever it is, but some of that is just they're not moving the ball. They're not pressuring teams by cutting and hitting open guys and then moving it again. And some of it is not having great passers, but some of it is more of stuck in the mudness that we've been talking about with the Bucks.
What do you think is going on?
I don't like to be an armchair psychologist, despite my background, but I say that because it looks like they're shell-shocked, right? Like, when they come up the court and you see a cutter, you see a backdoor, you see a guy who's... Have they thrown an outlet the whole series? I mean, legitimately, in your head, can you think of like, oh, there's a great hit ahead and they got a layup or a two-on-one? Because they're there.
You know, I think we're going to start seeing a few more of those, but I also think that, like, the transition thing is really interesting in general. So I can't remember one, but I also have not been watching that aspect nearly as closely as you have. But the Nets are also winning a lot of those offensive rebound battles, which, I mean, that's kind of an issue in and of itself. But I also think, look, like, let's give Bruce Brown and Blake Griffin a lot of credit. Like, they are playing like this is a playoff series and essentially, like, there's so little that you can really control other than things like that. Like, shooters are either going to hit their shots or not, especially for two teams that aren't going to be as reliant on the three as they are. So I think part of it might be that. But no, I haven't seen it. Keep going.
That gets me back to the Nets, I guess, which is that if the Nets continue to defend the way they've been defending, and Brooklyn doesn't make, the Bucks don't make any adjustments, any changes, the passing doesn't change, they don't actually go back to saying, hey, all right, for whatever reason, we can't run our entire offense through the interior, but let's maybe if Kyrie switches on to Brooke Lopez, we won't pop him. Why is Giannis popping on pick so much? Like, these are the things that I think need to be changed, and if they're not changed, if they're not changed, it's still just the Nets walk through them. I don't know what the final scores are. I don't know what the series ends up 4-1, 4-2, but it doesn't give me any hope for the Bucks. The hope for the Bucks to me is that game two, Milwaukee's defense was a mess. Last night in game three, Milwaukee's defense was like, oh, that's the Bucks defense. That's your elite league-leading defense. Joe Harris was like, what, 1-for-7 from three? It felt like a steal game, right? It's not a game.
Yeah, I think like 1-for-9.
Yeah.
Or 1-for-11. Yeah.
One for 11 overall, yeah. You missed a couple mid-rangers as well that were there. And it's like, you're not going to win a lot of games shooting the way the Bucks did and playing on offense the way the Bucks did. And playing on offense like that kind of lets Brooklyn off the hook, so to speak, for not putting a ton of defensive lineups on the court or not being a great defensive team. So if that doesn't change, I think that side of the court, you're stuck. I think the Nets
are doing, like, man, I...
You want to give the Nets more defensive credit.
I do. I want to give the Nets more defensive credit. I think Claxton has been great on Giannis. I think Blake's actually, like, that's kind of, like, one of the biggest things that have made the Nets so dominant in this series is that Blake has been, like, able to actually stay in front of Giannis on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
Like, the shots that Giannis has just pretty much been his averages, if not, like, slightly below that, and more turnovers in this series. He hasn't been able to, like, take a game over by any means, at least yet. We might see that coming. I think KD's help has been great. I think that, like, Joe Harris, aside from, like, you know, he had a really bad game yesterday. I think that's probably, like, the worst Joe Harris game I've actually seen, like, in a high leverage setting. Other than that, he's been pretty great defensively this season. You know, I think they have a lot of really. Bruce Brown is a fantastic defender. Landry Shamet basically like cut off Giannis multiple times, cut off Jrue Holiday multiple times. They have a lot of actually like really solid and quick defenders, and their help has been fast enough that I think it's just been difficult for them to make some of those entry passes and stuff. And I also think that like they just yeah man like KD's there every time. KD's there every time that like Kyrie has a mismatch. And I think that like, there is something to like the passing aspect of it where like get it into that guy anyways is probably there. And I do think that they need to make some adjustments. But like look man like the Nets are playing like a real defense. They're not by any means like the best defensive team in the league. And I think that they will look more porous against a different team. Like I think either the Hawks or the 76ers would provide like some challenges for them on offense that the Bucks won't. But like this is like an above average playoff defense or a middle of the road playoff defense at this point. Like they're not like the pathetic Nets defense. Oh my God, like they're going to be a sieve and how are they going to defend anybody? Like this is not that team. Like they've actually done a really solid job.
Agree. Yeah, completely agree. All I'm asking for from Milwaukee is if you have that mismatch in the, as an example, if you have that mismatch in the post, the Nets are making the necessary rotation on the backside. So swing the, skip the ball. Like you can still play serviceable defense. That's the thing for the Nets, right? Especially if Harden's on the court. Their offense is so good, they only have to be passable on defense. And this group has certainly demonstrated that they can be passable. All right. Is there anything else in this series? I feel like I'm all hot and bothered. You've talked me off the ledge a little bit with and like I said, I didn't even get to go on it too much, but Nash and D'Antoni and the Brooklyn offense and the mixture of set, like it's just this mixture of like old Houston, 15 Houston, 19 ISO Houston, Suns, like pistols. It's just like sprinkle in KD at the elbow. Kyrie needs his 2.3 post ups, but it feels like Kyrie makes every shot he makes, and then I look in the box score and I'm like, oh, you shot like 44%. I don't even understand. When did you miss?
That's kind of the Nets thing though, like perimeter-based plays, like that's gonna get you that.
Yeah. Well, that stat about them not getting to the free throw line, and what's weird is that is the representation of what I'm talking about, right? Like the Nets are speed, skill, shooting, and they don't play size, and the Bucks put a ton of size on the court. Like Chris Middleton's a huge dude. Chris Middleton would be like the center for the Brooklyn Nets. He would play like center. Yeah. And
Do you think that they just need to try a little bit more on the boards, honestly? Like,
the
'cause they're just running back a lot of the time.
so the glass is always tricky because of the situation of the shot and then the transition defense, right? I would be happier if you said, okay, we're going to keep Brook up top because for whatever reason, we think he's really pivotal in transition defense. And so if he's above the break in the middle of the floor, we can set our defense faster. But there is something to me to say, keep a guy in the dunker spot, Giannis, Brook, whatever, and challenge them. I mean, the offensive rebounds, so let me pull it up because it's something I started tracking after that first quarter. They got 9 offensive rebounds in the first quarter of game one. 9. And 44% of their shots were at the rim, which is way above league average. League average is like 29, 30%. Sirit, they had 6 offensive rebounds the rest of game one. Let me see. They've had 25 in the last 2 games. So about 12 and a half. So it's like, but the Nets have had 21. So you'd think if
Well,
Brooklyn's
that's
gonna,
the thing.
yeah, that's what. But the Nets have never been a team, especially against a team like Milwaukee, that's going to take a ton of stuff at the rim. Like the Nets aren't taking a ton of stuff at the rim, but neither is Milwaukee. This is just the strangest series. Why play tall men if they don't go near the basket? So my next book.
Do you have more Bucks rants?
I don't know. I think I've expired most of them. Have they
Okay.
been good?
Yeah. Oh, well, your rants. Oh, yeah.
Yes. No, my
Yeah.
rants, not the Bucks. No. Did my
Yeah, I
rant?
was very confused. I was like, wait, but you just did a whole thing.
No. Have my rants disappointed or did
Yeah,
they
your
live
rants have
up?
been great.
Yeah.
Your rants have been great.
I like a good rant every once in a while. All right. Is there any other thoughts you have that we haven't covered. We spent all our time on these two series, which I think to me are the most interesting series.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I had a lot of stuff in my head after the last two games. Not much. I mean, I think the Nets. I picked the Nets to win this series. I think they're going to win this series. Some of the stuff, you know, when you do. There were stuff that they did in game three that made me think, okay, like game four is going to be a really big matchup. And I think it still will be. But at the same time, there are some things you've said today that make me think maybe the game three win was a little bit more of an outlier. And obviously, like, there are certain things like the Nets shooting that were just part of that is being on the road. You know, like some of your role players, and Joe Harris probably isn't have that game at home. He probably just isn't, right? But the Nets had some stuff just not work out for them. And yeah, I'm curious if that sort of thing can replicate itself. I think you've kind of like brought me back to thinking that the Nets are going to maybe easily win this, but I don't know. I'm just really curious for game four. I don't really have like a good feel for this series yet, honestly.
Well, game one, the first quarter to me was so different than the last, like basically three quarters of the game. Game two was a blitz.
That was a blitz.
Yeah. And then game three turned into this 2004 game, mm-hmm. where, you know, teams couldn't score and it was a defensive grind and it was tough to get possessions. The Bucks are 14 of 58 from downtown in the last two games. That is, you know, I'm not mm-hmm. great with the math, but that's not good.
Yeah.
That's not going to cut it. The question for me is, at home, can you get some of your role players? Can Bryn Forbes, for Pat Connaughton, whatever, let's say Bryn Forbes, maybe more likely, can mm-hmm. he make four threes? Like PJ
He's
Tucker.
Done four.
PJ He's Tucker. Done four. PJ Tucker is like one of eight from downtown in this series. He's mm-hmm. typically a great corner three shooter. He's like 39% yeah. from the corner. So can you get guys like that, especially at home, where historically it's more likely to have a good shooting night? Can they win a game against the... So the thing is, I don't even know if the good shooting game from Milwaukee beats the Nets necessarily because of how volatile and explosive the Nets offense can be. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, I could still see Milwaukee winning game four and then us resetting the entire conversation in game five. It's like, okay, game five, we're right back where we started.
It's certainly, yeah, that's the shooting and the role players is a big part of why I don't have a good feel for it. It feels like variance has never played a bigger role in these series before. Like, I think that was a big reason why the Mavs Clippers series went back and forth as much as it did. But yeah, like, I just feel like the team that's going to shoot well is going to win these games, honestly. And it's really reductive, I guess, but that's just how many threes go up now.
Yeah. This is, by the way, also why I like the Jazz in the West, because they just have so many shooters and just mm-hmm. a handful of creators. And because it is reductive, but it's true, I think, where you've got teams of shooters who are going to take 50 threes in a game. Although, to be fair, the Bucks were only 6 of 31 in last night's game, and the Nets were 8 of 32. So it wasn't like these teams were taking 50 threes, but you take a lot of threes and you are less likely to have the huge swing in the game when you've got six or seven good shooters who, mm-hmm. I mean, what's Milwaukee's run now? Like five or six straight games with 17 threes made. That's just not Milwaukee, the Jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Do you think that there's like a consistency that they can keep up that some of these other teams maybe can't, or have they just hit shots?
No, that's what I'm saying. It feels like they're more consistent because they have defensive elements that we know work, especially building mm-hmm. building the paint around Gobert. And then on offense, my issue with them for the last couple of years has been a lack of firepower. But you add Conley, you add Jordan Clarkson as an explosive piece off the bench, basically, and you level up Mitchell. They now have firepower, and to the point you made at the top of the show, they've surrounded these kinds of players with skilled shooters, and in the case of guys like Ingles, like really good extra passers. Gobert, he doesn't take stuff off the table. The difference between Giannis and Gobert right now is that Gobert doesn't take eight threes a game.
You just want to talk about the Bucks, man.
No, I'm off the Bucks. That's it. Okay. I'm off the Bucks.
All right, more pick and roll. from the Bucks, and I think we can get a good series out of this.
I think we've reached the end of the show.
Ben, it was really good to talk about these series with you.
Yeah, that was really fun. I was like, I gotta have Sirit on, and we'll talk about, because your work that you do when you do a profile on someone and you deep dive has this very, it feels like this really fascinating oblique intersection with the kind of work that I do. And I'm like, oh, we'll have these incredible philosophical conversations about LeBron James improving his left-handed dribble and things like that. And we've just spent the last hour, just half of it's been me ranting about the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, hey, we'll have to do this again. We can get more esoteric and big picture and stuff. But I think we both like seeing how the small picture affects the big picture. So sometimes it's about getting lost in the weeds and stuff. But like that's kind of like where we are right now. I mean, like I think we are trying to figure out like what all of this means, but we're in the middle of it. So it's like, is defense over? I don't know. Like it's up to the Bucks to decide essentially, right? Like
can the Bucks save defense?
Yeah.
Or Philadelphia. We didn't even get to Philadelphia. Maybe. See,
we haven't talked about that series at all, right?
You look at that series and you say Embiid, Simmons, Thybul, like Danny Green, although who knows what's going on with Danny Green physically, but it's like, okay, can they save defense? Maybe they're the next challenger. You know, that's how it's starting to look for me. Like, okay, the Nets roll through the Bucks and then on to Philadelphia and a philosophical clash again between the way now, if Embiid's going to average 35 points a game against normal teams and Clint Capella, like are the Nets still not going to play a center against Joel Embiid? What? I'm trying to wrap my head around that. I have like a galaxy brain thing going on.
That series might just be like Joel Embiid try to outscore us
by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's gonna...
and then you get to the finals and potentially, I know a lot of people like what's going on with Phoenix because Phoenix is playing great, but you get to the finals and potentially you're facing Rudy Gobert, 3-time defensive player of the year. It just feels like a philosophical clash at the heart of.
Yeah.
All right. You'll have to come back and sort this out with me.
Yes, absolutely. We will do it as soon as we have some of the answers to these questions.
It's so discombobulating. You've lost your seating. You've slouched down in your chair you're clinging to the top of your chair for dear life.
Yeah, I'm spinning around. I'm looking, you know, I'm pondering. I'm staring into the middle distance. I'm just doing what I do.
The middle distance.
This is what I do at my desk every day.
Do you have any work that you want to like plug or draw people's attention to?
Well, I recently started The Ringer. I'm co-hosting The Answer with Chris Ryan, which has been a blast. We just had Logan Murdoch on to talk about villains. And just, it was a really interesting conversation about whether villains are obsolete in the NBA, what the future of villainy is going to look like. We talked about Trae Young. Logan wrote a piece about his kind of Joker origin story, as I like to call it. It was a really fascinating discussion. We got into the Nets. We got into Kyrie. I really enjoyed talking to them. And yeah, so if anybody listening to this is interested in any of that at all, you know, I think you'll enjoy it. But other than that, you know, I honestly just, I'm really glad we did this. I'm really glad we did this. Honestly, like I've been watching your videos for so long. You know, even before we started talking a little bit more, I guess, over the last like 6 months or so, but I always used to just think like, I feel like you've been like idea snatching from my brain. And I feel like maybe you feel the same way, for a while. So I'm just glad that we got to do this. Cause I feel like we kind of live in the same basketball world. You know what I mean?
I have spies. I send them over.
You have spies in my brain? Is this Inception? You've sent dementors over?
extract the important information from Sirit's head and that's how I know. You've been quiet lately. That's why I haven't made a video.
Think of it sometimes. So before I even, you know, you've got the video out there like already ready to go before like the thought has even crystallized in my mind at all.
You know, I'm going to have to cut all this out. This is...
Why?
I don't know. Sirit, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
If you want to support this podcast, head on over to patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. That's the best way to support all endeavors thinking basketball. We have a Discord community. We have historical stats. There's additional Patreon-only content. And right now during the playoffs, we are publishing every day the Back Picks box score that has all kinds of playoff data for each player and each team in the playoffs in the 2021 postseason. Otherwise, that is it for this one. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're enjoying the playoffs. And then, of course, wherever you are out there listening, you are having a great day.